This is Chuck Shaden on our old-time radio Radio Classics Nostalgia Night here. And this weekend, the Museum of Broadcast Communications christened, if you will, dedicated a brand-new exhibit honoring the great radio career of Jim and Marion Jordan, Fibber McGee and Molly. Joining the museum and us this evening for the occasion is the son of Marion and Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan Jr. is with us. And, Jim, we're delighted to have you with us tonight.
Thank you very much, Chuck. It's my pleasure. Honest to gosh, this has been really just about the most memorable thing that's happened to me in 40 years. It's been a great time, and I want to throw this in right now. I said it yesterday, and for anybody who hasn't heard it, Chuck has celebrated 20 years of broadcasting as of yesterday, and I really mean it. I think that's a milestone, and you are a heavyweight. And, man, I don't know how people do it. I really don't, but I congratulate you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I really appreciate that. I know that that you're a man who has lived with a family who had a tremendously heavyweight career. Your mother and dad actually started in radio in the very early 30s, didn't they?
Yeah, I think actually it goes back. I think the first time might have been 27 or thereabouts, 28.
They're out of Peoria, Illinois.
Came up here to
the Chicago area, started and worked all around the Middle West and in vaudeville, right?
In vaudeville and picking up whatever they could get, when they could get it.
Then they decided to do some a little bit of radio work and discovered that if they mentioned that they were playing in vaudeville at the, in Gary or Hammond or wherever around this area, they'd get a lot more people coming out.
Sure,
right?
they used radio as a medium of selling tickets in theaters. They used to have handout cards and mailers and things that they would do. And, as you know, they would send out stuff in advance. And the whole idea at that time was to sell tickets in a theater, and radio was something that, you know, that it maybe it was going to work, maybe it wouldn't.
Well, they were not making an awful lot of money. I think they made, like, the two of them together made $20 a week or something didn't they?
On
the air?
I have booking cards, which are now at the museum, the Museum of Broadcast Communications. And I got to say it now, it is just a tremendous museum. There are museums and there are, you know, you hear 100 different versions of this one and that one. And I'm not going to name names, but there are those that are internationally known and those that are Washington connected, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is the honest to gosh first thing I have ever seen. It is amazing. It as I said yesterday, it's the right place. Chicago's the right place, and the museum is so right. I just can't believe it. I had to throw it in.
Thank you. Well, we are grateful. The museum is grateful to you and your family for donating to the museum the complete collection of Fibber McGee and Molly radio scripts from the very first program on April the 16th, as a matter of fact, of 1935. All the way down through the years to the end of the line when they were doing 2 or 3 or 4 minute vignettes on NBC's monitor. Every single one of those scripts.
And don't forget Smackout.
Well, the 4 years or so of Smackout before Fibber and Molly. They're all there in the museum, initially here for viewing, and very soon people can come in and study those scripts. And these are the scripts that were held in the hands of Jim and Marion Jordan. Do you have any idea why they decided to keep those scripts? What prompted them to?
Dad was just one of those people. He saved very few things, actually. He didn't care about. I have to throw this in. Do you know that he wore the same pair of shoes? This is true. He wore the same. I have a pair of shoes. I guess I do essentially the same thing. But my dad had one pair of shoes. That he found in about 1933, someplace here in Chicago. And he decided those shoes were very comfortable. So to the end of his life, he had those same shoes. And somewhere when he was in his beginning 80s, he knew the company was going to go out of business. So he bought about four extra pair, and he had those same shoes all those years. That's the kind of guy he was. He saved things, and he was so meticulous, as I said, contrary to the closet. But at any rate, he saved things. My mother was just the opposite. She didn't know anything about that kind of stuff. She appreciated it and tolerated it. But I think, in fact, truthfully, he might have hidden those darn scripts from her for a long time.
Well, I've been there too. You know, all the collectors save it and hide it. And if you can hang on to it long enough, it becomes a treasure. And that's what we have at the museum now. All those scripts are nicely bound in chronological order, and they're at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. And we've been talking a lot about it this weekend. But once again, I thank you and the family of Marion and Jim for letting us have these in our collection here.
The family is so grateful, and I know my folks are they're laughing. They're pleased. Mm-hmm. It's the right thing.
Well, they made us laugh, and they pleased us in the audience for so many years that it works out really great.
Thank you.
You know, we're going to be joined in a little bit by Gail Gordon, who was Mayor La Trivia on the program, and of course in so many radio shows. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll see about listening to something other than Fibber and Molly that Gail Gordon did, and then we'll get him on the line.
Okay.
I'm Chuck Shaden. You're listening to Old Time Radio Classics here on WBBM News Radio 78 Chicago. This is Chuck Shaden on Radio Classics, our Nostalgia Night. Our guest in the studio is Jim Jordan Jr. And Jim, before we took the break, we got off the track just a little bit.
$20 a show.
That's what your mother and dad got in those the good old days.
Yeah, sometimes big. You know, they had a big deal. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'd get $50. I've seen those cards, and I think you may have some of them. Booking cards, they were called. Yeah. Advance booking notices. You're to appear 3 nights or 3 days or whatever. And the fee is $50. Mm-hmm. I think that might have been $50 for the 3 days.
Well, that was the vaudeville stint, right?
Yeah, the vaudeville.
But when they're on the radio, they were eking out a living. But they did find out that the one helped the other.
Yeah.
And so that really
they finally found out it was the reverse.
We're glad. Then they moved into Kaltenmeyer's Kindergarten and all the other shows.
And I noticed at the museum you had the Smith family.
Right.
And anyway. There's a story that's told that you know about, I'm sure, but how they actually did get into radio, and I think it's worth repeating.
Let's hear it. That's why we're here.
We lived and they lived and I lived with them in Rogers Park. And it doesn't matter how old I was. I was a small kid. But at any rate, they were at a neighbor's apartment, very dear friends of my folks. The man was an engineer, really a nice guy. Their name was Kaharsky, and Marg and Ted Kaharsky. And they had two kids who happened to be the same age of myself and my sister, a couple of years older than me. And the K's, as they eventually became known, they decided Kaharsky was a little too much or whatever. So the K's, as they finally became known, were there entertaining my folks, and I think my dad's brother and maybe his sister were there, and the truth is that they might have, who knows, that they might have had a nip. They could have had a nip. It's possible, at any rate. And somebody, they were playing cards, bridge, whatever, and they were listening in the background of radio, and somebody said, it was Marg K, said, "You guys are better than those people we're listening to." And he said, "What are you talking about?" And Marg went on and said, "There's a harmony team there. You hear that harmony team in the background? It's just another harmony team. You're better than they are." And mother and dad said, "Oh, come on, cut it out." And they said, "Yeah, we'll make you a bet. You go on down there tomorrow, do an audition, try anything. We'll make you bet they're going to hire you. They went down the following day, and son of a gun, they got hired. That's how they started. Really got started. Up until then, as I said earlier, Dad would do, you know, he would occasionally get a singing job back in the late 20s and do whatever he could, but it never really became a serious thing until that bet. And they went down, and my gosh, all of a sudden they had a steady job.
And they were off and running.
Yeah.
Oh, that's super. Well, that's the kind of story we're just sitting here waiting to hear. Thank you very much, Alan. Well, our guest in the studio is Jim Jordan, Jr. He's in town because of the dedication last night at the Museum of Broadcast Communications of an exhibit in honor of his parents, Jim and Marion Jordan, who starred for so many years as Fibber McGee and Molly. And I might add that we're hoping to have Gail Gordon with us here on the air. We've had a little difficulty making a connection, but we'll keep trying. We're going to be here till 10 o'clock tonight, so we'll keep trying until we get that set up. In the meantime, Jim, I was wondering if you spent much time as a youngster visiting the radio station where your folks appeared.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I spent much time there. I wasn't, I'm not one of those kids that showed up at every show, but I got to the point where I was quite familiar with walking in the booth and being able to look, the visitor's booth, and being able to look out and see what they were doing and became familiar with it. Really, that's about the extent of it.
Are we talking about the years when the show was in Chicago or in Hollywood?
Chicago. Chicago and Hollywood. As a matter of fact, my sister and I both, long before Fibber and Molly, we both we made an appearance with my folks more than once, two or three times. We were brought on, and I hate to admit it, but Kay, my sister, and I, to the best of my recollection, mother mainly, okay, Mom, I'll tell the truth, I think we sang Red, Red Robin.
Oh.
And years later, I got to know the Mock Twins. That's really from out of the blue. But the Mock Twins happen to have been born in Peoria, and they starred in the original Prince and Pauper, the original Prince and the Pauper, and with Flynn, as I recall. I'm not certain of that. But anyway, they were great and very big, and one night at a party, I knew Bill and Bobby very well, and we got along well, and they got up. Somebody said, come on, it's your turn, guys. And they got up, and they sang Red, Red Robin. And they did it in harmony, and I just broke up. I got thinking about this thing, and I told him about what happened when I was a child, which I still am. I'm still a child. Anyway, we did Red, Red Robin a couple of times. And I think the show might have been, it might have been one of the kid shows they did in, say, 1930 or thereabouts, or 31. And somewhere in the back of my mind, there's a kid, the title, and I think I may have sent you something about this, called Chuckles the Clown. It was a kiddie show, and I think that's the reason we were on. Marion and Jim were on it, and they did harmony, and they started breaking in voices, not really for the first time. I'll tell you about that, actually, how that happened. It's kind of an interesting story. But anyway, I think it was on a 15-minute kid show, and we did sing Red, Red Robin. I hope my sister isn't listening.
Well, tell us the interesting story.
Well, it goes all the way back to vaudeville. And people have asked repeatedly, I've had people say, How did a couple of young people from Peoria, and they were young people who fell in love at choir practice as teenagers, sweethearts, they used to call themselves. And my mother played piano, and very well enough to teach when she was 16. And my dad was a legit tenor, and he sang very well. That's an understatement. Actually, Dad was a heck of a singer. But at any rate, before the First War, they had started going together. And my mother was teaching piano and playing piano. She's just a young gal, you know. Mm-hmm. And Dad was working as a single whenever he could. And suddenly the war came along, and they were going to get married. He went overseas, and I'll get back to that later. His part of the war was entertaining, at any rate, as a soldier. But after the war, they married, and they started as a harmony team, and Dad would do solos. There were many harmony teams in vaudeville. Right off the top of my head, I think of Van and Skank. They were big-time vaudeville. Marion and Jim were not big-time, but they were a harmony team, and they patterned themselves after Van and Skank. And I think of others, harmony teams. I mentioned Peter DeRose. I started to someone yesterday. Mm-hmm. Peter DeRose and May Signe Breen were a very popular harmony team in vaudeville. The act was reversed. Excuse me. The act was reversed in that Peter played the piano, and May Signe, his wife, May Signe Breen, sang. She was a straight singer, and Peter DeRose played beautiful piano and sang harmony. And they were friends, as were most all people, especially those in small time.
Well, vaudeville, that was a family.
They ran across one another. And of course, Peter DeRose, not to digress here too long, but ended up one of America's great composers. He wrote Deep Purple, and the list is endless. And but their friendship dates back from vaudeville days, and they remained friends up until somebody died. I don't know who it was. It might have been my mother. But anyway, there was another harmony team, and they were buddies with Marion and Jim. They crossed in towns like Washington, Illinois. I remember Washington, Illinois. There was a place called Washington. Seems to me there was another. I can't remember all the names of the little towns, but the distances between towns were by the quart of gasoline. That's Tim and Irene was the name of this other harmony team, and they too were reversed. Tim played the piano, and he was really a hot pianist, and Irene was a belter of the first water. Boy, could she belt a song. She had the typical Broadway current, not current, but anyway, she was a great singer.
Now, I want to mention that she later was Granny on the Beverly Hillbillies on television.
That's all right.
Anyway, she was a great belter.
Just a tremendous singer, and they were close friends. Tim died very young, and you're right. Irene struggled for many years and eventually hit it big as Granny. Her name was Irene Ryan, of course. But the thing I was going to tell you is that, and this is the gosh truth, they were seated backstage or maybe at the hotel or whatever, and as always, acts used to criticize one another constructively. You know, the old joke, for example, about if you're a singer, You should do more jokes. If you're a comic, why don't you sing, you know, or do you, or whatever. But anyway, they were somewhere in some town, and Tim and Irene said, you know how you could really better the act? You're a harmony team. Why don't you try it? We listen to you here, and you're doing these voices, and you tell jokes beautifully, and you're doing patter. And why don't you try throwing in some patter? And in the beginning, they really were frightened to death of it. But that's actually what happened. Mm-hmm. They finally started throwing in a little patter. And at what period this would be, I'd have to say that it would be, say, 1924 or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. And they ended up in vaudeville, still a harmony team, and occasionally Dad would step out and sing Serenade from the Student Prince or something, and he would do it beautifully, and then they fell into a pattern where he would start doing an old-timer voice, talk to her like that. And my mother came back, and she suddenly developed a brogue. And she started calling him different names. I can't remember what they were, but she did an Irish brogue, that, which really came from the heart and something that was in her family background. And first thing you knew, they were perfecting voices. And they really didn't realize it. It kind of happened, and so that when they got into radio, they did have something to fall back on, and they weren't quite aware of it. But my mother, very few people realize this, but my mother actually did Molly, which began as a very thick Irish brogue in the beginning. And Dad did, when they started, Fibber and Molly. He was actually doing the old-timer in the beginning. My mother, though, did Teeny, the little girl, and she'd been doing that for years. For jokes, you know. I still think it's the best. It's the best child voice I've ever heard.
It is amazing, you know. You know that she's doing that voice, and it's such. It rings so clearly. Yeah, it's such a true young child.
And she also did, in addition, she did an uppity woman, I'll call her, who became eventually Mrs. Uppington. And she was a hoity-toity kind of a lady who talked, you know, way beyond the Paul, and she knew everything, and really a kind of a pain, you know. And then she did another character that it's funny, they didn't repeat this voice much, but it was a great character called Mrs. Wearybottom.
Well, what a wonderful name.
I told you she was kind of the early Marjorie Main. She was always talking way down in the dumps like this. And, oh, heavens, everything's just going to pot and the barn burned. And, shucks, my husband came home and the wheat crop failed. And, oh, gosh, I don't know. Anyway.
A suitable voice for the proper name.
Yeah. They had these voices that just kind of grew like Topsy, and eventually they became usable in radio, and in early radio they became usable, and eventually that led to a 15-minute show called Smack Out. You know the premise, but I'll just throw
ahead.
It in. Smack Out was a store, actually. It was a little country store, and it was run by the old-timer who talked up like this.
And that was Jim, your dad.
That was Jim, my dad, and they're all smack out of everything you came in to get. No matter what it was, it was smack out of it. And anyway, the characters who came in to visit the store, the general store, there was a young couple called Marion and Jim, and they used to come in and visit the old-timer.
Oh.
And Marion and Jim, the old-timer would say, why don't you sing for me and don't ask? We're smack out of that. And so they'd do a tune or he'd do a solo, you know. And Smack Out became, it just kind of grew and grew and grew. And It was a great era of, as you know, it was just a tremendous era of radio, I think.
Well, those early 1930s, it was kind of, let's try anything and see how it works.
Yeah. I think of Lum and Abner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lum and Abner. Golly. Tuffy Goff and Chet Lauk.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, you probably do know this, but for the people who are fans of old-time radio, Lum and Abner, you know how they started? They were college students together.
Really?
At Tennessee mm-hmm. or Alabama or someplace mm-hmm. down south. Yes. They were both very well-educated guys, mm-hmm. Southerners,
mm-hmm.
and they were in school together. One's a little guy. That mm-hmm. was Tuffy, and Chet was a tall, thin guy. And they were in the same fraternity or something, mm. and they started kidding around, doing these characters, and all of a sudden they were in radio as Lum and Abner.
Amazing.
Just a great show. And Vic and Sade.
Yeah. Oh,
out
of Chicago for so many years.
Boy.
Paul Reimer's a great show.
Yeah.
We got a lot of memories this evening here on our old
time
radio classics.
Too many I'm taking up all your time.
No, hey, we can talk all night. Maybe we will. There's another hour ahead of us. Chuck Shaden here on old time radio classics from WBBM. Our guest is Jim Jordan Jr., and he's got a lot of memories about growing up with his folks who starred not only as Fibber McGee and Molly, but as... Luke and Mirandy, they were. That was on.
That's another
that's,
one.
Luke and Mirandy. They did a lot of things in those days. You know, of course, everybody remembers the hall closet gag on the Fibber and Molly program. And do you have a recollection of the impact that made on your folks as far as the gag was concerned?
In the beginning, I don't think it had any impact. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. they looked for a long time mm-hmm. for a runner, something that would work that they could repeat.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
I don't really know where the thing started. I don't know whose idea it was, but they did it, and it was one of those things that it too kind of took off, and.
Mm-hmm.
The sound effects guys that did it, truthfully, probably made that work because
oh, yeah.
they realized mm-hmm. that they had done something very funny, and they realized something that they had done something that required great timing,
mm-hmm.
and so every time it would get a big laugh, and it finally got to the point where, as you know, it would get applause the minute anybody would get near the door. And often they milked it and didn't open the door. And nothing. But anyway.
They were teasing the studio audience.
Sure.
Yeah.
They were teasing the audience. But anyway, the sound effects guys that did it, and there were a series of mm-hmm. them beginning mm-hmm. here in Chicago, spent hours mm-hmm. topping mm-hmm. their last effort.
Oh, I see.
And so they had weeks, you know, between these things, mm-hmm. and they would think up ways of doing it, and incredibly, it just grew and grew and grew, and they rode around it, and they did milk it, and they mm-hmm. built it up, and sometimes they stumbled in it and caught you by surprise, and boom, everything would break, and the guy would go for 30 seconds or whatever, and the pause, and the audience is roaring, and there's a long wait, and then you hear that little bing, the bell.
Yeah. It was one of the great sound gags on radio, and I know that you're right, the audience would hope that would open the door. Now, if they were ever doing anything with the hall closet, somebody would talk about it. Then the listener was waiting for it.
Got ready.
More often than not, it just came up on you. It would say, you know, Mary LaTrivia would say, "Well, I have to leave now. I'm going out the side door." No,
right.
not that door. They'd say, "Bang!" You know, and it is a tribute to the sound effects man.
Yeah,
the sound effects men who over the years did this.
Yeah, there were quite a few.
Did this show on one program, the King's Men. Did a song, one of the Fibber and Molly shows, the Kingsmen did a song called The Sound Effects Man. And this was a time when I think of Frankie Pittman was the sound. He later became the producer and director of the show, I guess. But Frankie Pittman was the sound effects man at the time the Kingsmen sang about him and the general radio sound man. And guess what? Out of our hall closet, we have the Kingsmen and the sound effects man.
Ah.
What would we do without the sound effects man, that radio racketeer?
Tune your dial and listen a while.
This is what you'll hear. There's a knock up on the door. That's the sound effects man. Here's a kiss and maybe more.
That's the sound effects man.
If you'd like a ring, he'll give you a ding, ding, ding. And even in the early morn, you'll hear him blowing his horn. Cowboys galloping fit to bust.
That's the sound effects man.
Three more redskins bite the dust.
That's the sound effects man.
He has such an awful lot to do, and yet he very seldom ever misses a cue. He's a three-alarm fire and a fire chief, too. That's the sound effects man. When the wind is howling,
that's the sound effects man.
Thunder goes a-growling.
Sound effects man.
When the battle is raging, he's right in the middle of the fray. When he blows his whistle, crime doesn't pay. Benny's old Maxwell chugging right along. That's the sound effects man. When Kay Kaiser gets the answer all wrong. Students, that's the sound effects man. Hear those footsteps making a lot of muddy tracks. Dirty boots will never hurt the kitchen floor if it's covered with Johnson's wax. Tailspin Tommy and his aeroplane. That's the sound effects man. When McGee breaks a window pane. That's the sound effects man. He has gadgets by the score. From a peanut whistle to a cannon's roar. When Fibber runs to open that closet door. Look out!
Gotta straighten out that closet one of these days.
That's Frankie Pittman, the sound effects man.
That's the King's Men singing about the sound effects man on a 1940s Fibber McGee and Molly broadcast. Our guest this evening on Old Time Radio Classics here is Jim Jordan Jr., and he's reminiscing a lot about the career of his mother and dad, who starred as Fibber McGee and Molly. Maybe you have a question you would like to ask or a comment to make. We'd be glad to hear from you. Why don't you just give us a call here at WBBM or at area 312-591-7878. That's 312-591-7878. Got a call for Jim or for us if you want to ask about the Fibber and Molly programs or some of the old-time radio things. We'll be glad to chat with you. 591-7878. I'm Chuck Shade, and you're listening to Old Time Radio Classics on WBBM News Radio 78. Chuck Shade here on Old Time Radio Classics with our guest Jim Jordan Jr. And now, Jim, we heard the sound effects man. That nice song. Did you witness the sound effects man doing that crash a few times?
Sure,
didn't
did.
You?
I don't remember the names of the guys that did it, but you're right. Frank Pittman did end up. I believe Frank ended up in L.A. I'm not certain about that, but I think he did it in L.A. is what I'm trying to say. Not in Chicago. There was somebody else initially, I think, and eventually became the producer of the show. Just a great guy.
I talked to one of the times, of course, I knew Jim Jordan pretty well in the later years, since probably about 1973, and once I asked him, I obviously asked him about the sound, the gag, the closet gag and all of that stuff. And he, as you said, they were looking for some kind of a running gag to use from time to time. And he said on the Smackout program, they had developed an old sofa, a Davenport, a gag where when someone sat on it, the spring, you know, and that became kind of a running gag on that. Now, they didn't want to use that on the McGee series. So they were just waiting for something else, and took a few years before they came to it.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. They're not easily come by.
That's right. That's right. It's hard to get something that will really work.
You know, I got to throw in a thing about sound effects, man. I mentioned it. I was so pleased listening to the segment you did on Eve Arden on Armis Brooks. I think people would be interested in this.
Okay.
Dick Crenna was on that show.
It was Walter Denton, the schoolboy on there.
Richard Crenna, one of the finest darn actors there is. And he was born and raised in L.A., and as a kid, this is true, he wanted to be a sound effects man. And he grew up around that business within blocks of the studios. And that's how he actually started. He came to the studios. He had a buddy, and they said, we can do sound effects. Mm-hmm. And he came in there, and they started doing sound effects, whether they got on, hired as sound effects people or not. I think they did. He did, mm-hmm. actually. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. And the first thing, he was then about 14 or 15, as I recall a story. And the first thing you knew, somebody said, why don't you come on and try out for this so-and-so? And he ended up an actor mm-hmm. at a very young age, mm-hmm. and Miss Brooks was, Eve Arden.
Yeah,
but anyway, and Gail. But Dick Crenna was on it. And he was marvelous. You remember how great he was when he was with Walter Brennan?
Oh, yeah, and Real McCoy's
on
TV.
He still does the best Walter Brennan anybody's ever done. Anyway, so much for
Well, hey, guess what? We've got a whole bunch of folks stacked up out here waiting to talk to you.
No kidding.
Talk to us about the old-time radio and Fibber and Molly. So let's hear from Henry in Tinley Park. Good evening, Henry. Hello, is this Henry? We're looking for Henry. Is anybody here? I know Henry's from Tinley Park. We're waiting for Henry to stop in. And we've got Mike from Chicago, and George is from Chicago, and Bob from Elgin. They're all on our lines.
Hello?
Hello, who's this?
Mike.
Oh, Mike, we got you, finally. Hang on. What's your name? What's your name, Mike? You had a question for us?
Yes, Mr. Jordan, I'd like to ask you if you were ever at the show's taping. And if you were, where would you sit? Would you sit in the audience or in a booth?
Mike, I have sat, as a kid, I sat in the audience, of course, a couple of times. But basically, they had a place where they would put visitors, a glassed-in area, not unlike what we're sitting in right mm-hmm. now. And I sat in that place. It was called a sponsor's booth, really. Mm. And I got to sit in there and listen to the bigwigs. Anyway, I sat in the sponsor's booth. How old are you, Mike?
11.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So or maybe girl. I don't know.
No, Mike, we have a lot of young listeners who really enjoy these things. Now, you like to tune in to Fibber and Molly, Mike?
Oh, very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike. Really. Boy, oh boy, this does my heart good.
Thanks for calling, Mike.
Thank you.
Right. Okay, let's see if we can find someone else on the line here. Is George there? Well, someone must be there. Is anybody coming up on this? We got some, as they say, TD, right? Technical difficulties. Is anybody? If you're there, say hello. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's see what we can do to get somebody on the air here. Hello, who's this?
This is Bob.
Bob, where are you from?
Oh, my name is Bob Denton. I'm calling from Elgin.
Yes, Bob.
Two things for you tonight.
Yes, sir.
Okay, first off, I produce an audio cassette newsletter called Spectrum, a rainbow of information for the blind and physically handicapped people in the Elgin area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many of them. Well, there's about 75 blind people here in Elgin. I'm totally blind.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would probably like to know about your program. So first, if you would send me like a 2 or 3 minute tape describing your program,
mm-hmm.
I will put it in the next issue of Spectrum so that the blind people here in Elgin will know that you're on the air.
Well, I can do it real fast right here. Just tell them to tune into News Radio 78 Monday through Friday.
I don't have any way to tape this on
okay.
the radio.
Well, we are here 7 nights a week. And when the hockey is over, we'll be
well,
here really 7 nights a week.
But if you mm-hmm. could maybe send me a little 2 minute tape with your name.
Sure,
you know,
we'll be glad to do it.
And the mm-hmm. second thing is, how can I get a tape of that Fibber McGee and Molly thing that you had tonight? That was fantastic.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
You know?
Well, we'll have to talk about that. I don't know. It's not too easy to get copies like that. What you have to do is have a tape recorder and stand by, you know, and don't touch the dial. Keep the radio set at 78, and then keep that tape
handy.
You
know Marty Zimmern, don't you?
Pardon me?
You know Marty Zivin?
No, I don't think I do.
Oh.
Okay.
Well,
do you have a question for Jim Jordan, Jr.?
No, I don't have any questions about that. I like to hear the old-time radio program.
Okay, well, we've got a nice Fibber and Molly clip coming up in just a little bit, so you You hang on for that.
I keep you awake at night rather than talking books and put you to sleep.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Well, if I could get that tape from you, or if you would give me a call, I'd love to give you my telephone number.
Okay, not over the air. Our producer will get the number for you. Okay,
all right.
You hang on now a second.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Jim Jordan Jr. is with us this evening, and I'm Chuck Shaden, and we've got lots of memories ahead of us. We are going to tune into a Fibber and Molly tape. Let's see if we can get someone else on the phone, though. We got a line open. Say hello. Hello, who's there?
This is Seth.
Seth?
Yeah.
Where are you calling from, Seth?
Monticello, Wisconsin.
Monticello, Wisconsin. Okay, you got a question for us?
Yeah. Did Mr. Jim Jordan Jr.?
Yeah. I'm kind of, Seth, I have to throw this in. I'm a junior, but my father was a junior, and I've got a son who's a junior, so we're all Jim Jordans. There were four of us. Anyway, go ahead, Seth, your question.
I wanted to know, did you ever go to studio and watch your parents perform?
In radio, you're referring to, right, Seth?
Correct.
Yeah, I did. I did that when I was about your age, starting about mm-hmm. that time. Not all the time, but I did, yes.
And do you have any idea how your parents kept from laughing?
They didn't, Seth. They didn't. They broke up a lot. And as a matter of fact, Chuck and I were kidding about that earlier. My mother had a terrific sense of, well, she had an Irish sense of humor, and boy, when she laughed and really laughed, it was from the gut. And she loved to see my dad break up, and he hated mm-hmm. it. He was very embarrassed if anything went wrong in his readings, and so she would wait for him to break up. And you talk about laugh and mm-hmm. oh boy. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, they enjoyed themselves, and I think when you listen to Fibber McGee and Molly programs, it's evident. Not only do the Jim and Marion enjoy themselves, everybody else, everybody on the show, and that's why it was
and
such
Gail,
a success.
I think oh, Gail, yeah, I can left, remember yeah. times when Gail would go up. But anyway, Seth, go ahead.
And I have one more question.
Okay.
Did they perform in front of a live audience?
Yeah, they performed in front of a live audience, and when they first started doing it, that is a long, long time ago in 1935, Fibber McGee and Molly, they did it in front of a live audience, and they wore costumes of the characters as they had done in vaudeville, which came long before radio.
Even though the listening audience couldn't see them, the studio audience saw them.
The studio audience yeah. saw them, and they felt they yeah. had to perform mm-hmm. in character.
And it probably helped them with their characterization, too.
Sure, and they weren't the only ones, Seth. There were other people. Ed Wynn comes to mm-hmm. mind. Mm-hmm. You know, Ed Wynn, in early radio, Seth, played a fire chief, and he wore the hat and the
yeah.
uniform.
The fire helmet,
Ed
yeah.
Wynn was a big star many years ago, and anyway, they weren't the only ones who wore costumes in front of the studio audience.
Seth, I want to ask one question of you. How old are you?
I'm 10.
You're
10.
Boy.
We're so glad that you're enjoying the old-time radio shows.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, we had a lot of folks here standing by, and we got a few more, but we've got to do a little business, so we'll get back then. If you'd like to join us, well, give us a jingle at 591-7878. Chuck Shaden here on Old-Time Radio Classics from WBBM News Radio 78. This is Chuck Shaden back with you on Old Time Radio Classics, our Nostalgia Night. Our guest is Jim Jordan, and we've got a few folks who want to check in with us. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, what's your name?
Oh, yeah, hi, Chuck. This is Bob from Hinsdale.
Yes, Bob.
Yes, enjoying
I know you've been hanging on for a while, and I appreciate you staying with us.
That's quite all right. Enjoying your program. First of all, I just wanted to say congratulations on your 20th anniversary.
Thank you very much.
I've been following you for probably 19 of those 20 years.
Oh, that's great. I really do appreciate that.
All the way across the dial. I enjoyed when you were talking about the aspect of Jim and Marion Jordan's role in Chicago radio,
mm-hmm.
but there was a role that they played, and I didn't hear I didn't hear it mentioned, so I thought I'd like to toss this in and see if you know the answer to
it. Go.
Okay. Well, they appeared for a time in the early 30s on a Chicago-based radio program, and their appearance was not as Fibber and Molly, but rather as Toots and Chickie.
You are right.
And I wonder if you know the program.
They did, you know, they did whatever they had to do,
uh-huh.
And you're right. And I can't tell you what the show was.
Oh, okay.
But it was a popular show, and you may be talking about one of the early, it might be one of the early.
You know, I have a recollection that this might have been a sketch on The Breakfast Club.
You are absolutely right.
You mean this was a trivia question?
You win.
Absolutely okay. Correct.
Don McNeil loves you.
they were with Don McNeil for a while.
You're right, and they were very proud of the fact. My dad was always proud of the fact that he got on the McNeil show. Everyone wanted to be on the Breakfast Club. You know that.
Well, that was real big-time radio.
It still is.
Bob, anything else?
That was it. Just to say I enjoyed the program, and I just wanted to contribute then.
Thank you very much. We sure appreciate it. Hello, you're on the air.
Thank you. It's so good to talk to Jim this evening and with you also, Chuck.
Thank you. What's your name?
I'm Charmaine, and I'm from Manhattan, Illinois, just south of Joliet.
Yes, Charmaine.
Oh, boy, I have a cousin, Charmaine, no longer living. Go ahead, Charmaine.
That's all right. Uh-huh. I wanted to let you know that we're a third-generation family listening to your old-time radio classics.
Oh, wonderful.
Is that so?
And it has been the life. My children never miss it. When Mother is busy elsewhere, they drag her in,
uh-huh.
whatever she's doing, to make sure she doesn't miss it.
You're gonna think this is funny, but say your first name again, please.
Charmaine.
You remember the song?
One of the great songs, yeah. Wasn't that the theme song for What Price Glory, the silent version?
Donald Novus, a tenor, sang a great... He was a great tenor,
mm-hmm.
and he ended up at one time working on the Fibber McGee and Molly show, but he had a record called Charmaine. Oh, boy, beautiful song. Anyway, go ahead, Charmaine.
Thank you. It's wonderful to hear that. We enjoy your show so very, very much. My son loves the Green Hornet, but my daughter and I and Grandma and Grandpa all crack up when we listen to Fibber McGee and Molly.
Thank you.
Marvelous stuff. It's nice to know. I was going to say, it's nice to know that even now, you know, we're talking 30 years after the program went off the air.
Yeah.
You know, 30, because it ended in 1960. And here... people are still enjoying it, and we're winning new friends as fans. It's marvelous. Go ahead.
And, well, what I was going to say is that we watch, and I should say watch, listen to me, we watch the radio
mm-hmm.
as a family together when we do this, and it's really quite interesting.
You're right. People do watch the radio. That's what you did. You watched the radio. Anyway, go ahead. Forgive me.
That's all right. I was going to ask you, what was your most memorable event that happened?
You're asking me?
Mm-hmm. With Fibber McGee and Molly, what was your most memorable event?
I have to be honest and tell you that this trip has to be right in there with all the memorable things. There have been many in my life, but this trip it's been memorable. There are other things, but anyway, it's overwhelming to me at the moment, Charmaine.
Well, my children now talk of when they get old, how they're going to sit with their grandchildren and listen to this.
I hope we can be around to share some of these sounds. Thanks, Charmaine. We appreciate your call tonight.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we have another person on the line. Hello, you're on the air. Hello. Somebody's on the air. Hello, you're on the air. We have a real trouble here tonight. We must have the gremlins left over from World War II coming in there. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. What's your name?
I'm Don.
Don, where are you from?
Elmhurst.
Okay, how's things in Elmhurst tonight?
Real fine.
Good. You have a question?
Hi, Don.
Hi, Jim. I have a very soft spot for your mother and dad.
Thank you very much.
In 1936 or 37, I was downtown at a Boy Scout Honor Society, the Order of the Arrow, dinner. At Harding's on the west side of the loop.
Sure, I remember. I remember Harding's.
And when we were through, they marched us across the bridge to the merchandise mart to your mother and dad's broadcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there was about about 150 or 200 of us, and there were, seemed like an awful lot of people in the studio besides us. But the cast included Harlow Wilcox, and the orchestra was Ted Weems and Elmo.
You are right.
And Perry Como.
Elmo who, Don?
Elmo Tanner.
Right, and what did Elmo do?
Whistled.
Right.
We're going to send you an invisible facsimile.
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
But Perry Como was the singer with Ted Weems.
That's right, and there was a girl singer with that band.
I don't remember her.
Well, they changed her name, finally.
I know. Can I raise my hand?
Okay, go, go.
Her name was Marvel Maxwell.
You are right.
Marilyn Maxwell.
Marilyn Maxwell. Yeah, you're right. Perry Como was the singer with Ted Weems.
But your mother and dad came out about 15 minutes before the broadcast and talked to us and made a big thing of the scouts there. And
you know why, Don?
No.
Because I was a Boy Scout at about that time, and I remember marching down Michigan Avenue in the middle of winter in a parade.
Uh-huh.
You may have been in the same parade. I think it was about 20 below. Anyway, they love the Boy Scouts, and so do I. Go ahead.
But your dad wore a fedora hat. And
yeah.
It was curved up on both sides. And a big watch chain with a KC emblem in his lapel. Your mother had a house dress on.
You're right.
With a hat with a little feather that curved up over the top.
That's right. That was the remnants of the vaudeville costume. Mm-hmm.
But they dressed it. We had more fun with them after the show than when the show was actually on.
I'll bet.
But my wife asked me to make one request, Chuck.
Yes.
Please play more Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, hey. You know,
thank you.
You know, I don't need any pressure on that. Thanks, Don. We appreciate your call.
Thank you much.
Chuck Shaden here, and Jim Jordan Jr. is with us, where we've got some folks waiting in line to say hello this evening. Hi, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
And who's
Hi.
This? What's your name?
Kyle.
Kyle, from Brookfield.
Yeah.
You're checking in tonight. What's your age, Kyle?
I'm 8, turning 9, the 21st of May.
Well, happy birthday
boy.
Coming
happy
up.
Happy birthday coming up is right.
Okay, what's your question, Kyle?
Well, I'm sort of out of question. I sort of have answers, really.
I
liked Fibber McGee and Molly is one of my favorites, but not really. I like more like specific broadcasts and people.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like the one with the two-tone salesman. That one was good, and I like ones like that.
Oh, you mean you like the storyline on the Fibber and Molly shows? They're great stories, and they were created
you
by...
You sound like a writer in the making, Kyle.
Yeah.
That's how writers start out.
Yeah. Well, keep listening to the radio, the old-time radio shows, because it'll give you an opportunity to use your imagination.
Yeah.
And it'll work well for you.
And me and my brother are trying to make a radio show.
Are you?
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Do it.
Well, do it.
Do it.
Do it and put it on tape and send it to me. I'll tell you if it's worthy of the network.
Do you announce when you go to Metro-Goldwyn Memories and things like that?
When I go to Metro-Goldwyn Memories, not necessarily. Sometimes I do, but mostly I'm in and out a lot over there.
Because in May, me and my father want to go for the sale, and we'd like to meet you sometime there.
Well, I hope I'll be there when you come in.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you for calling. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Chuck.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Dick, Chuck.
Yes, where are you from, Dick?
I'm from Elk Grove, and I want to say hello to Jim also.
Hi.
I went to a high school on the north side of Chicago that was the...
Don't tell me. Go ahead.
Lakeview.
You
had Edgar Bergen, later on Jimmy Nelson, probably two of the world's great ventriloquists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And after that, Tom Bosley from Happy Days, but the name I really wanted to bring to your attention was Bill Thompson, who played Wallace Wimple.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
High school also.
Bill is from Lakeview, huh?
That's right.
And maybe one of the finest performers who ever worked in any medium.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about.
That's a fact. He was an incredibly talented young man who did... He did so many things, it's unbelievable.
That's
you
right.
know, he worked on Jack Armstrong, not as Jack Armstrong, but he eventually became the old-timer. He did the voice when he was... He was doing the old time, and I think he was about 24 or 25 years old.
Right.
And he did Boomer. Remember Horatio K. Boomer?
Yeah.
Short Bear. he did anything. He was just great.
And his wife, Sweetie Face.
Yeah. Anyway, he died much too young.
I never heard about what happened to him.
He died on one of those sad things, part of the God's plan. Bill died young. That's all I'll say.
It happened suddenly.
He really was a tremendously talented guy, and I was telling Chuck today earlier, you may be interested in this, I don't mean to labor it, but the fact is that Jonathan Winters had told me a number of years ago, a long time ago, in fact, that Bill Thompson was an idol of his.
Is that right?
Yeah. And you know how many kids nowadays, young performers, say Jonathan Winters is their idol.
It's like Robin Williams talks about Jonathan.
That's true. Uh-huh. And 100 other young comics.
Right.
And Jonathan's was Bill Thompson.
Well, that's terrific. And I was glad to get through to ask you that question.
Thanks very much, Dick. We appreciate the call. Jim Jordan is with us this evening. Jim Jordan, Jr. I guess we have time for maybe just one more phone call. A little clock on the wall is creeping up on us. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, Chuck, I enjoy your program.
Thank you. Who's this?
My name is Earl. I'm calling from Munster, Indiana.
Yes, Earl.
Hi, Earl.
Hi. Jim, I have a question for you.
Maybe
the question was asked earlier. How many programs originated out of the original Fibber McGee and Molly?
How many total number of shows?
Right. In other words, I believe, was it the Great Gildersleeves?
You mean spinoffs from the original.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Gildersleeve, Beulah. Remember Beulah?
No.
Beulah was the maid on the Fibber and Molly show, and she'd say, somebody ball for Beulah, and Marlon Hurt, the man played the female maid.
You remember Tom, Dick, and Harry?
Well, I have some of the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
The program went off the air. I'm not that old. Okay. When the program went off the air. And I enjoy listening to this program quite a bit, and I do have some of the tapes. And I just was curious at how many. I had heard that there was a number of programs.
I think it primarily Beulah and Gildersleeve were the main ones.
But
the Gildy spinoff was probably the first spinoff.
I think it was.
Before they called them spinoffs.
Nobody knew that word at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Beulah, just quickly, we're kind of short of time here, but Tom, Dick, and Harry was a very famous trio in radio, singers, and one of them was Marlon Hurt, who became Beulah.
We're all out of time. Thanks very much for calling, Earl. Thanks, everyone who called. Jim Jordan, Jr., a delight for me this week, and a very special treat.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks.
We're going to call you at home sometime in Reno, Nevada, and do this again. On the wall, the clock says we're off, all out of time. We'll see you again. Thanks very much for tuning us in here on Old Time Radio Classic. This is Chuck Shaden. Good night.